This is Arts Interchange. I'm Doug Storm. Our show is This Little Mayberry, and my guest is singer, songwriter, and painter Will Johnson.
Darling, tell me why you're driving out every single day.
Johnson might be best known as the lead singer of Centralmatic, which disbanded at the end of 2014, but he's also the leader of South San Gabriel, which persists and contains the same musicians. Today we discuss the ways the bands and the styles, including Will Johnson performing under his own name, represent personalities and can often be heard in conversation on the 2017 Will Johnson album Hatteras Night, A Good Luck Charm. We've opened with Every Single Day of Late, the second track off that album, and A Centralmatic Personality.
Darling, tell me why you're driving out every single day of late.
Back in April of this year, Will Johnson came through Bloomington for a living room show and joined me in the WFHB studios for a brief chat about Hatteras Night, A Good Luck Charm. Which is to say, I asked him to speak about an old album, which was new to me, just as he was finishing a new album to be released in September. Well, it's September. And once again, Will Johnson is in Bloomington to support that latest album, which is called Wire Mountain, and will be released by Keeled Scales. Johnson will be downtown at Landlocked Music on Tuesday, September 10th, from 6 to 8 p.m. And now, This Little Mayberry. Will Johnson on Hatteras Night, A Good Luck Charm. I never quite know what to do with these kinds of interviews because I guess I'm more of a lyrics guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked before in the past about, you know, you kind of noodling with a sound frequently.
Yeah.
And playing with a word just because it sounds a certain way.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Don't you mean something there? Shouldn't there be meaning there? Right. We'll get to that, I guess. I just wanted to start out, actually, Will, with a pair of early favorites of mine are Mandatory on the Attack,
yeah.
Fidgeting Wildly.
I'm helping you see. You won't even look at me. It's too much downtime. It's too much downtime. You're stolen your thoughts. You fine-tune your expert. You're kicking up the hi-fi jams. You're fidgeting wildly. It's too much downtime. It's just too much downtime. But you're trapped in your room. You're the only audience. It's too much downtime. It's just too much.
This is Redo the Stacks 23 track, first Centralmatic album, right?
Yeah.
With just you and Matt, right? Matt being the engineer.
Matt engineered it, and my friends Lindsay Romig and Scott Dambaum came in and did the violin and cello work. But otherwise, he just let me go from station to station
nice.
And build each song. Goodness, I have to throw myself back in the time machine 20
years,
a little bit,
man.
Here.
20,
yeah,
20
Christmas
years
1996, I think. Yeah. I was between semesters and just wanted to get as much recorded as I possibly could during those, you know, 3 or 4 weeks off. Mm. And so we did it all at his house there in Denton, and I'd show up at 10 a.m. and we'd start and we'd go till about 10 p.m. We had a tradition of buying powdered, this is really disgusting, but we'd go to the Texaco station every morning and get these powdered banana nut cappuccinos, and we'd live off of those and Zesta crackers, just boxes of Zesta crackers.
And, oh, man.
You know.
Oh, that had to be so healthy, though.
No.
Cappuccino.
Oh, it was awful.
So much sugar in that. It's probably crazy to think about.
That's how we lived.
Oh, man. So is that something like closest to punk that you think you would have gotten? Or, I mean, I don't know much about anything prior to that, if Funland did anything in particular.
It may not, I don't know if it's defined as punk music, but I feel like the aesthetic of recording and the kind of devil may care nature that I had throughout that particular session, and also a lot of the very raw sounds that we got, those could, I suppose that could be considered a punk aesthetic for sure. It definitely ruffled a few feathers here and there, because I don't think the label was expecting something that peeled back and that raw. You know, they were used to pretty produced records, and admittedly so. So when I handed them, you know, all that music, and it was just like, you know, there's distorted drums all over the place, and there's just weird sounds all over that record, and it's pretty brash. I think it surprised a few people, but they, you know, it's not like they threw a brick wall up and said, we aren't going to put it out. Mm-hmm. They did it anyway.
So. Well, you were fairly young then, right? So that's like 24, 25 at the time?
I was 25, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you had already been a musician at that time, already been on the road. You were back in school at that time?
Yeah, that's correct. I had taken a little bit of time off between my sophomore and junior years to just go on the road and be in a band for a while. I was undecided on what I wanted to do in school anyway, so it was getting to that point where I was going to start wasting a lot of money just spinning my wheels. So yeah. I dropped out and joined a band from Dallas and played drums for them, a band called Funland. Mm-hmm. And we signed a record deal with Arista Records in 92, I want to say, and hit the road regularly up through 95 or 96. Mm. Split up. I went back to school and started doing the Centromatic thing, just kind of as a bedroom project.
Do you seem, is that fair? I mean, that sounds fairly fortunate, right? I mean, I don't have any clue to, I can't assess it,
but it's, yeah.
It sounds like a fortunate, a big break, a lucky break.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think it happened for a reason. I always attribute it to Dallas was a little bigger city than I was used to. I was always a little bit intimidated by the size and by the energy of that city. Now I'm not as much. Now I really like it more than I did, I think, when I lived there at the time. But once I moved back to Denton in May of 1995, I started truly writing songs with lyrics and everything. And the timing of it was within days of landing back in Denton. And Denton at the time was a real bustling, the music scene there was at a very peculiar point where there were a number of great clubs, there were a number of incredible bands for sure, but they would do these open mic sort of nights and, you know, just bring your gear and play for half an hour sort of things. And it was a place where it felt like you could take some good artistic risks and you wouldn't be laughed at, or you wouldn't meet folded arms or rolling eyes. Like everybody was just doing something unique and different. And some people were sinking and some people were swimming and, you know, but it just seemed like it was welcome there. And as a small community, everyone kind of knew each other. So it was neat to kind of get back into that town after a 3 or 4 year break. And I didn't feel as afraid there. So I started writing songs with lyrics and handing out cassettes to friends and just sheepishly, you know, saying, hey, listen to it when you get a chance, you know.
But it's pretty cool.
And so that the timing of that did work out, I think. I felt less inhibited, I think.
Well, there's one thing that obviously every, you know, you read anything about Will Johnson, it's about the prolific Will Johnson, right? And the other thing is the collaborative Will Johnson. And we've talked about it before as well. One thing that struck me is that you're not alone in collaboration. Like you're with a group, like generally it seems like a lot of people you work with are collaborative too.
That's true.
Generally. So it's not like we have to say Will Johnson is the only collaborative prolific artist. There are a lot of them that you actually spend a lot of time with. Those guys are all pretty prolific and fairly collaborative.
Yeah, that's correct. So it takes everybody.
Yeah,
it takes everybody kind of stepping out of their comfort zone. So
So it just kind of struck me. You know, you see the same names over and over again. So you know, why is it always the Will Johnson's the collaborative one? I mean, maybe it is, but you know.
I tend to agree with you. I think, you know, it obviously takes numerous people to collaborate, so they're collaborating just as much as I am.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, so often they're stepping out of their comfort zone just as anyone would. But that's part of the joy of it, is that you get a glimpse into the way that they may write or prepare or work over verses or work over choruses or whatever the case may be. That's part of the joy of it. And I think that's where learning comes from.
Oh, totally. It's a great space for it. So it's nice to be able to feed off each other that way.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And the other thing that you read over and over again about Will Johnson is you're melancholic, or you're Mr. Melancholy, right? And I can't necessarily disagree with this, right? But I often ask, I want to ask you, are these things that you agree with, or do you think that they narrow how people receive you? Or
that was a real common word on our first several European tours, I guess around 2000, 2001, always melancholy, you know, and writers would hang on to that word.
Yeah.
And it became kind of a, it became a thing. I think it's song to song. Definitely. I do agree with it in a lot of cases, for sure. And I think pound for pound over the course of all those records, that there is a melancholy theme, you know, hanging around, but I don't think it's a constant thing. I don't think that it's, I don't think it's fair to paint with that broad a brush stroke quite.
Would you not quite call yourself Mr. Melancholy? You wouldn't call yourself necessarily Mr. Melancholy?
No, not necessarily.
Depends.
No.
Someday.
That's where I get it out of my system, and then I can go back to just being like a cut up.
Right. Well, so the last time we talked, I think we focused primarily on Scorpion and Swan City Vultures.
Swan City Vampires.
Oh, sorry, yes. I mixed your...
I have vampires and vultures, so it's okay.
Mixed your vultures.
There's vultures away and there's Swan City vampires.
Well, I had asked you last time too, just about the titles of things, vultures, murder, et cetera, pretty poison pen in some ways, right? And then I recognized on this album also that you could have called it Predator.
Right.
If you'd have wanted to, and it would have slided right in with your titles.
It was on the list. It was on the grocery list. It just didn't quite make the cut.
Well, you probably had to fight against it. But it's Hatteras Night, a good luck charm. And this comes from the Hatteras, which is the last song on the album, and it's a line from that song. So as I would like to do, I like to say, Will, what is that? What is Hatteras Night and what's the good luck charm?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I was kind of fixated on North Carolina at the time, and that particular part of North Carolina is not the part of the state that I go to the most. I'm usually in Western North Carolina, but I just had Hatteras on my mind, and I actually wrote that song, the final song on the record. I wrote it most of it on a trail run. Mm-hmm. And that was at a time where I was getting most of my lyrics just out of these long sort of therapeutic trail runs. Mm-hmm. And I would race back to the car, of course, and like grab the phone and record as many of the lyrics or the melodies that I could. Mm-hmm. But the Good Luck Charm is essentially the joy of coming home to my wife and my family at the end of a long tour, and after 3 or 4 weeks of solitude in the car and just playing shows. I mean, it's kind of a love note home. Mm. So that's what I meant by the sentiment of the song itself. Mm-hmm. And so it carried over to the title of the record. Mm.
Well, that's nice. And it's nice to end that way. The album begins with a different location though. Childress,
yeah,
to Ogden, right?
Yeah.
So this is Childress, Texas?
Childress, Texas.
To Ogden, right. Utah.
That's right.
Was it like a trip you took or?
The song, I started writing the song in a church parking lot in Childress, Texas, mm-hmm. on the beginning of a West Coast tour. And then I finished it maybe 4 or 5 days later in a Holiday Inn Express in Ogden, Utah. So
nice.
Nothing terribly clever about that title. It truly was. Like, right. That's how long it took to write that song.
Just a fact. Yeah. Okay, good. So I wondered a little bit about how you describe the album. You know, again, a lot of people who write about music end up describing albums for you.
Right.
And, you know, I thought, why not have you try to describe
it? Oh, my goodness. I don't know. It bounces all over the place. And I think I wanted to show a lot of different musical colors for the fact that I was lucky enough to have three really good friends recording with me on the thing. Ricky Ray Jackson on steel and guitars and some keys. And then I had Matt Pence, my former bandmate from Centromatic, on drums, and he was helping engineer as well. And then my friend Britton Bisonhurst on bass and some keys and synths, and he also engineered. So I wanted to get a collection of songs together that that were hopefully different enough to set themselves apart from one another as the sequence played out, but also gave them fertile territory to kind of show their musical colors as musicians, just because I love and respect those three guys so much. Mm.
It's something similar to the previous, at least Scorpion is similar to that, right? Or in Swan City?
Swan
well?
City was, yeah.
Not Scorpion. You're alone in Swan.
And Scorpion. Some of these songs carry over mm-hmm. from mm-hmm. that writing. That they didn't make Swan City because I didn't think they quite fit that mm-hmm. puzzle mm-hmm. as well. So I held them back and then filled Hatteras out with a handful of more songs just to try to make that puzzle fit together. Mm. So they each... I think they complement each other in a certain way because they were recorded in similar ways.
Well, I was going to say, you know, for me, this is an interesting blend of those two last albums in a lot of ways, right? So, but I did hear Scorpion throughout.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was clearly present. You know, it starts out that way in a lot of ways. Scorpion's one of my favorite albums ever.
And, thank you.
Well, it's such a fantastic, it's cohesive in a lot of ways. And a lot of this is, even though it's so dissimilar sometimes.
Right.
The thematics seem cohesive to me.
I tried to keep that underlying. I mean, there's a lot of examination of relationships, either personal or intimate or just religious or business or whatever the case may be. There's a lot of, I don't know, I tried to break some of those things open. But you know, Scorpion was kind of an accident, right?
That's what you said. Yeah.
I didn't know if I told you the backstory.
Yeah. No, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it was
right?
A real, like, you know, real strange way that one fell together. And it wasn't intended at all. But at the same time, it was out of necessity.
That's one of those beautiful accidents, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, those are the most, I don't know if they always make the best records, but those are always the most fun records mm-hmm. when you can just write in the moment and let the record be a document of a collection of days and mm-hmm. and just a certain little patch of time in your life.
Yeah, it's a slice of you. It's pretty impressive. Well, so when I say I hear that in the opening song, it's a kind of cowboy song, right? It has that cowboy song to it. And there's the kind of recurring, I don't know what you play when you do it, but that knocking sound that recurs throughout the album.
Yeah.
So it also keeps that, you know, your attention throughout, that the songs are linked even just by that sound, which is pretty interesting too.
I hadn't written kind of a cowboy song in a long time, so I wanted to see one through.
It's a cowboy direction too.
Yeah, it kind of is at times, and there's some strange, you know, lo-fi yodeling and things like that in there in the background. Actually, those yodels were taken from the demo, from the 4-track version that I recorded in my bathroom, but Britton was able to fly them over to the multi-track recording, and they lined up as far as tempo and timing went, so we just imported those over, and that saved about an hour of trying to yodel in the studio, which I'm sure everybody was quite grateful for.
That's pretty good. So you mentioned relationships here in the album. Also, there are a couple of things that kind of recur. In the first song, there's Shameless Sin. Mm-hmm. Shameless comes in again, I think, somewhere. Sin comes in either the next song or the song after.
Right.
Be Brave happens again later as well.
Yeah.
You know, go brave and stand steady or something like that, right? So you do have this perspective throughout that seems strong in each song. And I was kind of, I don't think this is true to say, but I had a feeling of it being more female.
Right.
Right? Like the first song is not. I mean, but it still feels that way to me.
Yeah, definitely. The second song is kind of written from a female perspective. So I was definitely trying to step out of traditional, I don't know.
That's the Ruby Shameless.
Middle-aged male narratives.
Where you are right now,
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, man, you got to step out of that stuff.
You know,
start moving around the room a little bit more. So I would challenge myself from time to time, song to song, you know, just to see if I could assume a role and see it through.
Well, it does shift as you note, the songs, at least, I guess, say that it sounds Will Johnson, Scorpion, then Centromatic, you know, back to back and, you know, flipping one to the other. But obviously the first two do that,
right?
You start out in that Scorpion mode and then it's a Centromatic sound that comes in next. But
again,
the thematics are the same, which make the songs seem to be talking to each other in the thematics.
Yeah.
So there is a really nice distinct personality that seem to be talking to each other throughout. Like you actually seem to be talking to your band personas throughout, which I really loved.
Well, I think I counted, and I'm so rarely over the course of, I don't know, I never really did sort of character narrative lyrics for a lot of the Centromatic stretch of, you know, records and things like that. And within this record, I think I counted up, there were like 14 different names, you know, like Ruby and, you know, Tommy and Delilah and Rick and
Maisie May.
Before I knew it, I had this small township of people that I've kind of had roaming around in my head. And it's like, well, I think all these people are kind of interacting with each other in a strange way.
Ruby, Shameless, float across the floor. For once I caught you watching and staring through the smoke. I dream of walking you back home, back to your mama's, or just somewhere not alone. So let's take the time and wish it all away. Maybe not for forever, but this is somewhere you can stay. Because to them you are nameless, just a little crush of flesh. A cigarette burn, or a spill across your chest. So Ruby,
'cause I see you plainly, in my own sacred light. So let's take the time and wish it all away. Maybe not for forever, but this is somewhere you can't stay. Until the light, it slowly starts to fade, erasing your bad times, push them all away.
And so with the Hatteras record, it does feel like this little Mayberry collection of people all trying to deal with each other.
Yeah, yeah. A Spoon River or a Winesburg as well. There's a not that bit. They're that negative.
I think maybe subconsciously that was getting into the writing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting a little more brave with writing that way now. And I think that just comes with age, perhaps, but also I am definitely writing more story songs these days than I used to. And I was very shy to do that back in the day. And we talked about the angular sort of, what does that mean?
Right.
More painterly kind of approaches and fragments and just like interesting sounding lines. And I'll still do that from time to time, but I'm definitely writing some more direct narratives now. For better or for worse, you know, if it bores the tears out of people, that's, I'll take my chances, I guess.
Well, I was going to say to me, it sounds, you know, wonderfully structured. You paid attention to your rhymes. And again, I'm not trying to, you know, say way to go, Will, you paid attention to rhymes, but it's clear you're creating little things here. Like your songs are intentional and they're intended to be telling these stories, and they're not hinting at stories. They're telling stories.
Yeah.
And that's very clear, and it's very well done. And like I said, even if something seems dissimilar, it seems like there's a woman confronting an issue. There's a man confronting an issue. Yeah. There's a woman confronting a man or multiple men.
Right.
There is what's it like to grow up? You know, there's all these things in there that I think you just do. And I mean, they're not long songs, even if they're long musically sometimes. The actual lyrics don't take a lot of time.
No, I sprawl out with the music sometimes.
But there's so much going on, but it gets accomplished, is what I'm saying.
I hope so. I still feel like I'm warming up to it, you know.
Yep.
And there are some new songs, some that I'll play tonight, as a matter of fact, that are a little more they have more of a bow tied at the end of the song, you know. There's a little more of a true finish, but this is kind of a document of the ramp up to maybe where I'm writing right now.
Gotcha. So this was a 2017 release, and you did say you were writing some of this while you were working in the Scorpion space?
Just on the heels of Swan City. Some of those songs were starting to take shape even as I was piecing Swan City together.
Also, just a fantastic album. So to me, you're getting stronger and stronger, but what that means is that I'm liking them more, which doesn't necessarily mean anything to anybody else, but to me, they do become stronger, more cohesive, and almost documentary with real power in them, with the story and music.
I think I'm just getting – I don't know. I feel like this is common, but I think one tends to get a little more confident with their voice as they go along. And also, I'm not 25 anymore. Now I'm 48. And as my friend Christian put it, we were talking over beers one time a few months ago. It's like, you know, we're each at an age where – we still have really good energy and we've still got a heap of drive. I think we each still have the same amount of drive that we had in our 20s, but we're at a point where we see back down the road pretty clearly and we can see a lot of the detail from our experiences, but then we can kind of see up the road through the fog a little better right now too. So maybe, you know, maybe that contributes to becoming a little more confident with truly telling stories.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Well, I did want to also ask about Heyo, Hiyo, which I love also, but it reminded me of Shakespeare, because there's that line in there, Heyo, the wind and the rain, that's Twelfth Night, with the fool song in Twelfth Night, which I think actually applies pretty well to a lot of your songs. I don't know if
it's been 23 years since I read Twelfth Night, so if I were tested on it right now.
Well, no, I understand that. But the beauty of the internet is that I can go look it up.
Yep.
Hey-oh, hi-oh, watch me refrain.
you hear the echo. And in that song, it's just, you know, people going, or in the Little Fool part, it's, you know, hey ho, the wind and the rain, and it raineth every day. And, you know, you're going from a boy to a man, and, you know, there's drunkenness and there's wealth and there's being a fool and everything like
There's constant transition and hopefully constant growth. But at the same time, this, see, that I never considered it in those ways at all. And that is why inevitably and infinitely, I'm far more interested to hear someone else's interpretation of one of my songs than to stand up and talk about my interpretation of it. Because about 10 times out of 10, the other person's is more interesting than mine.
So. Well, well, you know what? I think that's just the fact of things coming out of your brain, right? All people make connections, right? And they're just some interesting connections because words do that to people. So
a lot of it does come from reading. I can't deny that, and I've long, you know, admitted that I'm just as influenced by writers and by fiction as than I am, you know, or as I am music or bands. So I think over time that just gets in there. It and even in if it's not intentional, even if it's just a subconscious slip or something like that, it just gets in there for sure.
I think I always ask this of everybody, and no one really wants to answer the question, but do you feel like one of these is really something that you thought, man, that's really good? I mean, it's hard to be proud of things sometimes. You don't want to be proud of things sometimes, maybe, but you know,
it's
not
always
a nice lyric.
Yeah, it's not always fashionable or cool to be proud of.
You got Trouble has got its teeth. You're right. And Filled with a Falcon's Dream. First of all, that's a great title, Filled with a Falcon's Dream. And then there's Trouble Has Got Its Teeth. It's a great line.
We're pretty young here. Filled with a Falcon's Dream. Like she always seemed. In her sense gets thin. Trouble's got its way. Sneaking.
I was proud of that song for the fact that I just loved the, I liked the break in it and the matter. It came out a little different than what I thought it was going to come out with when I brought the demo in, but I was super proud of what we all got from our performances in that song, and the break in particular, I was real pleased with. So if I can say I was proud of something,
good.
I was proud of that one.
That's good.
That's probably my favorite one on the record.
Oh, good. See, that. I'm glad you said it. It's a beautiful song. It's well done, and it sounds beautiful.
Our show. Thanks to Will Johnson for joining me to discuss his 2017 release, Hatteras Night, A Good Luck Charm. Again, Johnson will be in downtown Bloomington at Landlocked Music today, Tuesday, from 6 to 8 p.m. in support of his latest offering, Wire Mountain. I'm Doug Storm. Thanks for listening.
Lucius calls. It's the same with Timmy. Yeah.